say 300 officers of the law, Basij, riot police, and guards. That's a fact. In the United States, if they kill one police officer, what happens? They killed hundreds. And then they call this peaceful protest? If they were killing people, why didn't they kill the peaceful protesters on day one and two? And the whole time, a TV channel called Iran International, and also BBC Persian, but Iran International in particular, which is funded by Western agents, intelligence agencies, they were advocating armed violence. And I tweeted a clip of one of their presenters saying this. Is Ofcom in the UK going to do anything about it? Of course not, because that's their policy. So you can kill people in Iran, you can bomb the country, you can send in terrorists, you can openly advocate terrorism, and then the media will deny all of it. Just like with Gaza. I mean, no one should be surprised. If anyone is surprised by now that maybe the Western narrative is not correct, then that person has been in a coma for the last couple of years. It's obvious after Gaza, if anyone believes Western narratives, I mean, let me put it this way, Ali. 2.3 to 3 million people went to the streets in Tehran on Monday. Whether the West likes it or not, that's a fact. Anyone can go to the live stream of Press TV and watch it. They have hours of it. And then in other cities too. Whatever the numbers, huge numbers of people went to the streets, right? So when you have all this huge crowd going to the street, that means they support the state. That means they support the Constitution. Despite the fact that we have Persian language media empire in the West, there's nothing like it in the world. Not against China, not against Russia, not against anyone. You have maybe hundreds of TV channels, but a few of them big, beaming in anti-Iranian information, outgunning Iranian media by far. You have all sorts of Telegram channels and Twitter accounts with big followings. And then you have thousands of people who work 24 hours a day, literally in shifts, in camps like Albania. They're online foot soldiers and the bots and all that. 24 hours a day, every day, 365 days a year, anti-Iranian propaganda is being beamed into Iran. So the Iranians hear everything. They hear all the anti-Iranian information, misinformation, twisted truths, lies, and all that. They outgun the Iranian media. So I'm supposed to believe all these millions of people that went on the streets in Mashhad, in Isfahan, in Tabriz, in Marand, in Shiraz, in Ahvaz, in Kerman, in Zahedan, all these people, they say, they killed thousands of people on the streets and gunned them down, but we're still going to go to the streets and support them?
Piers Morgan would say, wouldn't he, that, you know, Iran is an authoritarian dictatorship and those people are forced out into the streets.
Of course. But, you know, the Iranian regime, as they like to call it, the Iranian regime, if it's so competent that in the middle of this mass uprising, it can bring millions of people to the streets, then they're quite competent and they deserve to be in power. But none of this makes sense. The only reason why it makes sense to these pundits in the West and these so-called Iran experts and the media is that it's negative. Anything bad about Iran makes sense, even if it's contradictory. Like when they say Iran is collapsing, it's falling apart, it's despised, it's corrupt, but it's a growing menace, it's a threat to the region, it's a threat to the world. How can it be both things at the same time? Why? Even though it can't, but they believe both, because both are bad. They say, oh, it's negative. And here's the case too. Iran can bring millions of people to the streets. Well, it's an authoritarian regime. Well, how come the authoritarian regime cannot control an uprising? None of this makes sense, but it's not supposed to, because it plays on the emotions of ordinary people. The same people who one day were saying we shouldn't get involved in Venezuela, the next day they're saying we're number one. You know, they play upon the emotions of different groups in American society, and they're fooled. So right now, whether it's AOC or Trump, they're all saying the same thing. It's really interesting. Everyone is on the same page. We have to save the Iranian people. Well, if you want to help the Iranian people, the first thing you can do is send the sanctions. When Trump said, I want to increase the tariffs, that's to hurt the Iranian people. So they want to strangle the Iranian economy, just like they did with Venezuela, just like they did with Cuba, and they do with these countries. And then they say they're the friends of Iran. They're trying to kill Iranians. When you impose sanctions, you get shortages of medicine. Then because the economy doesn't grow, the currency goes down, the price of medicine goes up. And since people lose jobs, they cannot buy medicine. Or people lose their jobs, they can't make money. That causes families to break up. Or all sorts of harm. The objective is to tear apart the fabric of society so that people become so desperate that they will rise up in desperation. That is the objective. That's war. And it's targeting ordinary people. So for Westerners in the media, Western media, I don't mean the young people and those who are supporting the Palestinians and all that. And, you know, but, you know, these people who speak about human rights, they're all the enemies of human rights, every single one of them. Because what the United States is doing to Iran is trying to make it suffer. And so are the Europeans. I mean, the German chancellor apparently said something that, like, the Iranian regime or something is not legitimate or something like that. I mean, he is the guy that when the Israelis started bombing Iran, he said they do our dirty work for us.
And yesterday, the German interior minister went to Israel and met with Netanyahu, a war criminal wanted by the International Criminal Court. So it's just extraordinary, the double standards.
We talked about Mike Pompeo's comments about every Mossad agent walking beside every Iranian in the street. Mossad, of course, is Israel's notorious spying and assassination agency. And on Tuesday, Donald Trump published a post on his Truth Social website stating, quote, Iranian patriots, keep protesting, take over your institutions, with three exclamation points. Save the names of the killers and abusers. They will pay a big price. And he added, I have canceled all meetings with Iranian officials until the senseless killing of protesters stops. Help is on its way. MEGA, make Iran great again. Dr. Mirandi, how do you and how do you think the Iranian public and government understand those statements? And are there people in Iran who want American military intervention or regime change to, you know, bring democracy to the people of Iran or make Iran great again?
Do you want to be bombed into freedom is the question.
Yeah.
I've never tried it before, so I can't say with certainty if I like being bombed into freedom. You know, I'm speculating that it's probably not a good idea based on what I've heard here and there. But the fact is, and this is another thing that people in the United States have to appreciate, people in Iran see that Mossad is involved. People in Iran know that Pompeo has admitted this. It's in the news here. And does anyone in their right mind in the West think that the popular opinion in Iran supports the Mossad and their involvement in Iran? They support CIA involvement in Iran. They support the threat of strikes and attack against Iran? Yes, of course, there's a small minority that's pro-Western. There's a small minority that's pro-Israel. You will find people in Iran that support Israel. Racists, usually, like these people who hate Arabs. They're a disgusting few. I have a student who had an argument with me over the last semester, or someone at Press TV actually has this disgusting view. But overwhelmingly, people despise the Israeli regime. And the reason why they came to the streets in such extraordinary numbers is because a lot of people who usually don't even go to the streets, they just mind their own business, say, no, here I have to go. I have to take part in this anti-riot, anti-Western interference demonstration. But the belief in Tehran, or at least the belief among many, is that this whole episode was to bring us to war. The Americans manipulated the currency, sparking protests, and these groups that were pre-prepared infiltrated and then caused riots and violence and a lot of people died, including a lot of innocent people who were just going to work or coming home from work. And then the Americans can be pushed to war. And you see everyone now, as I said, from AOC to Levin, all of them are saying we have to help the Iranian people. The genocide in Gaza, none of them said that. The ongoing genocide in Gaza. So this is the real truth. And if the United States attacks Iran, they will be hit very hard, and they should not expect Iran to hit American bases or to hit Israel. It will be far broader than that. So Trump should be very careful, because this is a very sensitive region, and a lot of oil and gas go through the Strait of Hormuz, and the Persian Gulf is not very wide. And the oil and gas fields exports from Iraq, most of the MPs in Iraq are close to Iran.
The Strait of Hormuz is very narrow. You don't need big long-range ballistic missiles. We're talking about a distance of dozens of kilometers, maybe hundreds of kilometers at the most, and Iran has thousands of missiles. Perhaps, I don't know that I know or you know, the so-called intelligence services of the West issue estimates, not facts. So all of that may be the case. In June, last June, Israel, with the full backing of the United States, launched a massive war on Iran, decapitation strikes, killing many senior military leaders, and Iran fired back missiles. We spoke to you at that time. Now, what I want to say to you is that Iran has carried out True Promise 1, True Promise 2, True Promise 3. That didn't deter Israel or the United States. They're coming back again. I read, maybe it was in the Washington Post or the New York Times, one of them, that Iran has only a third of the missile launchers that it had in June. So I put it to you, Dr. Mirandi, that there's a lot of bluster and hot air. What do you say to that? I'm doing my Piers Morgan impression here for you.
What I would say is that Iran today is significantly more prepared than it was 7 months ago. It has learned a lot from the 12-day war. Remember, Iran hadn't fought a war. The Israeli regime and the Americans have been, you know, they're always in war. But Iran had not fought a war since Saddam Hussein, with Western backing, invaded the country decades ago. This was the first time. And so Iran understood its shortcomings and its strengths. And it's been preparing itself ever since. And it's been putting a lot of effort in this. And there's another thing, Ali, that's important. During the 12-day war, Iran focused on the Israeli regime. The Americans struck Iran once. What damage was done? Debatable. If any significant damage was done at all, but I don't want to go there. The Iranians struck back at Doha. 6 missiles struck, destroyed sensitive buildings that belong to the United States in Qatar. But the focus was on Israel. Iran did not want to expand the war. They wanted to put Israel in its place. And ultimately, it was the Israelis that sought a ceasefire. Steve Bannon, the day after the war, went and said that the real story here is that Israel was in bad trouble during the last few days and they needed a ceasefire. And they're begging for a ceasefire. And Trump helped get them one. A war with the United States would be a totally different war. Iran's real capabilities are not directed toward Israel. Iran's real capabilities are directed towards the Persian Gulf. Why? Because for decades, the United States has been threatening Iran with war. They invaded Afghanistan and they took Iraq. It was a unipolar moment. They were in Central Asia. Iran was surrounded. So they were building underground bases with short-range missiles, medium-range missiles, which are much more maneuverable and easy to move around, short-range, medium-range drones, to destroy assets across the Persian Gulf, their navy, their underwater drones. They've been preparing themselves for war with the United States. War with the Israeli regime has always been a sideshow. So these long-range missiles that hit the Israelis are a small part of the Iranian arsenal. And Iran has more missiles than it had back then. And it didn't use by far. I mean, it only used a small proportion of its missiles. and a few launchers were destroyed. But there's footage of Iranian underground bases where you see launcher after launcher after launcher after launcher. That's wishful thinking on their behalf, just like everything about Iran. The problem with the United States is that they like to underestimate Iran because of their own supremacist worldview. And I'm talking about the elites. The regime in Washington is supremacist, like Israel. And because of that, they're always looking down at others. And of course, at the the worst of the worst is always Iran. If they go forward with that sort of calculation, they're going to be hurt. They thought in the 12-day war that Iran would collapse, that Iran would fall. Remember when Trump tweeted, unconditional surrender. But what happened? Ultimately, it was Netanyahu who saw the ceasefire. It wasn't Iran. Iran was not communicating with anyone asking for a ceasefire. It was willing to go on. In fact, and this is not a secret, but it is not widely known because it's not talked about abroad, but Iran was about to fire a huge volley of missiles towards the Israeli regime because the Israelis had almost finished their air defenses. And if the war had continued like 2 or 3 extra days, you would have seen a big, big and unprecedented strike on different targets in Israel with older generation missiles. But in any case, the point is that the smart thing to do for the American people is to not buy this nonsense. The state has popular support and no one welcomes invasion or attacks. And the Persian Gulf is a very sensitive place. Trump just yesterday, I think, said he wants oil at $53 a barrel. Well, we'll see what happens if there's war. I think that oil can easily go up to $300 a barrel if it's all out war.
Dr. Mirendi, if you can put the current events in a broader regional and global context, after the June war, the 12-day war, which killed more than 1,000 people in Iran, including many children, you know, it was, as you were mentioning, a failed regime change effort. Is what we're seeing now a continuation of that war? But also, how does what is happening right now in Iran, how does that relate to the recent U.S. aggression against Venezuela, the efforts to, you know, pull another regime change operation there? How does it relate to Iran's support for the Palestinian liberation struggle, particularly the resistance in Gaza?
Nora, this whole antagonism towards Iran is about Palestine. If Iran was like Turkey, I mean the government, if it was like Saudi Arabia or any of these countries, there would be no sanctions and all would be well, and Iran wouldn't be a regime. You don't hear them say the Jordanian regime or the Egyptian regime or the Saudi regime or the Turkish regime. These are all.
And you notice that Syria has gone in the Western press from being a regime to a government now.
Yes, of course, because now democracy has been brought to Syria and Al-Qaeda. It's stunning. And this shows how easily Americans, and again, I'm not saying all Americans, how easily they're manipulated. 9/11, I mean, they said the world has changed. But a decade later, they were working with Al-Qaeda, the same Al-Qaeda, as they say, in Libya and then in Syria. And now they brought the head of Al-Qaeda to power and Trump supports him, meets him, sprays perfume on him. It's quite stunning. And you don't see mass protests in the United States because it's sort of like, I think most Americans are, or at least a large segment of American society, they're so deeply propagandized that they just don't know what's going on. So yeah, so Maduro has killed millions of people, according to Trump, and he's a bad guy. But the head of Syria, Jolani, who was a co-founder of ISIS and the leader of Al-Qaeda in Syria, he's a good guy. That's how it works. And in this upside-down world of Western morality, obviously Iran is going to be the bad guy. So Iranians recognize that they're paying the price for supporting the people of Palestine.
From my perspective, and maybe that's a slightly optimistic note to kind of draw a discussion to a close, but do you think that there are reasons for optimism now as we're speaking, Dr. Mirendi, Are we on the eve of a devastating war, or do you see signs of glimmers of hope or optimism? And how can we encourage the strands of hope and optimism from our limited means and perspectives?
Despite this massive media network in the West, this Persian anti-Iranian media network that's anti-Islamic Republic of Iran, but also anti-Arab, and this well-funded media network through oil and gas money and NATO countries that tell Arabs that this divide and rule is sort of beginning to melt away because people are seeing through the propaganda and the Western Empire is on the decline. And the same is true in Venezuela. One of the really fascinating things, Annie, is that I've been to Venezuela, I think, four times. And each time, because it's so far away, I spent a few days because going back and forth is not easy. Venezuelans are very friendly to Iranians, and the relationship is excellent. So the issue is not religion. The issue is not sect. The issue is not race. It is the empire versus the rest of the world. The rest of the world wants to live in peace, and they want growth, and they want sovereignty, and they want dignity. And they have excellent relations with each other. Or they want to have excellent relations with each other. And it is the West that wants to keep everyone divided. So, of course, they are the ones who benefit from sectarianism. And their tools in the region fund that sectarianism and promote that sectarianism because they're in the American camp. But it's not working like it did before. If, God forbid, there's a war between Iran and the United States, it will be devastating. But it will be the end, or at least it will bring down the empire much faster than before. It will cause great harm, but the Iranians will not lose this war. Without a doubt, it will be the U.S. government. And when that happens, I think a lot of people will be seeking Donald Trump and all those people who advocated this war and saying, you've ruined the economy, you've ruined our lives. But all that aside, the good news is that just like in the United States and the West, young people are waking up. Across the world, people are waking up. They see the ugliness of the American empire. That's one of the things about Trump that's actually helpful, because he says the quiet part out loud. Biden, he started the genocide with Netanyahu. Obama was constantly using drones to murder people across the world. He destroyed Libya. He started the dirty war in Syria. He gave Saudi Arabia and the Emirates the green light to destroy Yemen and to carry out a genocidal war. All the previous presidents were more or less the same. This is an empire. But Trump is so crude, and simultaneously the United States is on the decline, that it's becoming apparent and clear for everyone, or at least most people, what's going on, whether inside the United States, whether across the West, or beyond the West. People across Latin America, when they hear Trump say, the oil is mine, does anyone think that people even in right-wing countries like Argentina appreciate that they like that, or they feel threatened by it, or they feel insulted by it? What Trump is doing, the language that he uses, the behavior that he has, the policies that he pursues, Greenland and, you know, the trade wars and the continuation of the CIA support for the proxy war in Ukraine, all of this is hurting the United States, and it's clear to everyone what's happening. The hypocrisy is gone. Obama, in that respect, was the best of them all. And Clinton in his youth, too. They were able to pretend that they cared about democracy, even as they were destroying country after country. And people believed them, or some people, many did. But now, people are awake. That gives me a lot of hope for the future. Young people, when I see young Americans against the Israeli regime, I could never have imagined this 3-4 years ago in my lifetime. And when I see so many young people on the streets, and that's what the ceasefire was about, by the way, the fake ceasefire, because they're killing people every day. I mean, that's your expertise, of course, you and Nora and your colleagues. But the fake ceasefire, in my opinion, was basically about preventing global public opinion from exploding, because it turned against Israel and the regime, and we saw people in Australia of all places, and Italy, and across Europe, and everywhere, protesting in huge numbers. So they needed a respite. But the world has changed, and I'm optimistic. I think there's a good chance of war. I don't know if it'll be a major war or a minor attack or no attack. I don't know, because Trump is not mentally stable and he's easily persuaded. But the Iranians have prepared themselves for the worst.
Well, Dr. Mehrandi, let's end this discussion on that hopeful note, knowing that anything can happen at any moment. No matter what, we always learn so much from your insight. And we wish you and everyone in Iran peace, tranquility, safety, and justice. And truly, we wish that for everyone on this planet. Dr. Mehrandi, thank you for your precious time. And we hope always to have the opportunity to listen to you and learn from you.
Thank you very much. And thank you, Nora. And thank you. I thank your team for all the fantastic work that you do. You were supporting the Palestinian cause when the numbers were few and awareness was very limited. You've helped create this environment where young people could learn about the truth and reality. And hopefully, gradually, they'll learn more about Iran and Hezbollah and Ansarullah, and recognize that these entities, their struggle is to support the oppressed, and the Palestinian people are the most oppressed people in the world today, and they will continue to do so because they have a responsibility and they feel responsible for it. And I think hopefully in the future, more Americans will become more aware about this reality and recognize that the narratives produced by the mainstream media on Iran are just as ridiculous about as the narratives on Palestine. And in fact, the narratives are on Iran are hostile because Iran supports Palestine.
Thank you very much, Dr. Mehrandi.
Yes, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Mohammed Mehrandi in Tehran. Thank you for tuning into Electronic Intifada Radio. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. For more interviews, reports, and analysis, along with feature articles, podcasts, and our live stream, check out electronicintifada.net. Produced by Pierre Loisel, Nora Barrows-Friedman, and Tamara Nassar. The Electronic Intifada is a program service of the Middle East Cultural and Charitable Society, Incorporated, a 501c3 nonprofit organization.
We are diverse, independent, and yours. CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, British Columbia.
This is Bird Note. Male birds give it their all to get a female's attention during the breeding season. Some males sing, and some build intricate nests. But then there's the magnificent frigate bird. Magnificent frigate birds are huge, gangly seabirds found around the warm waters of the southern U.S. and all the way down to Brazil. They often nest in large colonies, building nests out of sticks in the trees and shrubs. When it comes time to mate, the jet black males perch in groups of up to 30 at a time. Displaying side by side, each male inflates the skin of his bright red throat pouch, which swells into an immense elongated heart shape below his long, slender beak. Then the male rattles his bill, drumming it briskly against the huge red balloon of his pouch. The result is a crazy, jazzy mix of drums and clicks. As they drum, the males also wave their heads, quiver their wings, and screech a bit. And then they really step it up when a female glides overhead. When a suitably impressed female lands beside a male, the two will shake their heads in rhythm, clack their bills together, and intertwine their necks. A perfect ending. But just the start of raising a family. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.